Hello and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you by Kilkenny Library Services in partnership with the Decade of Centenaries Fund. My name is Owen Swinton Welch, and in these podcasts we focus on revolutionary era Kilkenny, specifically in this series on that fateful year 1921, which has defined much of our history in this country since. The final 6 months of the War of Independence were the most intense and deadly period of the conflict. Today I'm going to discuss the dramatic shootout and escape of members of the West Kilkenny Flying Column, also known as the 7th Battalion Active Service Units, or ASU, from Garry Ricken House in West Kilkenny. Now, the endeavours of that day in March 1921 had not been pre-planned or anything. Having become surrounded in their lodgings, the men of the Flying Column, all of whom were from the 7th Battalion area in and around Callan, made an audacious escape attempt to avoid being captured by the Crown Forces after becoming seemingly trapped. The events of that day wouldn't have looked out of place in a Hollywood film. So where was Garry Ricken House? What remains of it is located in the far west of Kilkenny. If anyone knows the village of Coola on the road between Callan and Winegap, it is not far from there. The house was situated just about a kilometre from the Tipperary border. In fact, the main entrance to the estate today is actually in County Tipperary. It is just off the N76 Callan to Clonmel main road. At the period we are talking about here in 1921, Garry Ricken House and estates was owned by the Ormond or Butler family of Kilkenny Castle fame, who had used it initially as a dowager house. That's when the mother-in-law has to move out when the oldest son gets married, and was afterwards used as a hunting lodge for shooting holidays. It was nominally owned by the Earl or Marquis of Ormond, but his Kilkenny lands were under the control of his eldest son, Lord Ossory. This was a way of Lord Ormond to avoid double taxation. But by this time in 1921, the house had been vacant for many years and was actually due to be auctioned the week after the events that are described here. Although the main house itself was empty, the adjoining house was occupied by the caretaker, John Luttrell, and his wife Annie and his young family. Interestingly, John and Annie Ní Fhíle had been married in Callan in October 1916 by Father Delahunty, the famous rebel priest who would break out of jail later in 1921. In addition to John and his young family, the extended Luttrell clan, that included six of John's eight siblings, his mother Bridges and his father James Sr., lived in the house to the rear of the main house. John was made caretaker of the estate after his father retired from the same position some years previously. As a brief aside, coincidentally, James Luttrell Sr. died exactly 3 years to the day of the Garry Ricken altercation on the 12th of March 1924, aged 69. All the Luttrell children were heavily involved in the IRA and Cumann na mBan. That is perhaps apart from 36-year-old John, who had a lot to lose if he was too involved in the movement, would fear that he could lose his caretaker situation. One of John's brothers, that's Paddy Luttrell, was a member of the very active West Kilkenny Flying Column. And so the empty and isolated Garry Ricken House really was an ideal resting place for IRA men on the run, as they would be guaranteed lodgings in an empty house with a hot meal always at the ready, provided by the extended Luttrell clan. In fact, some of the column had stayed there just 2 nights previously, so they would have been well used to the surroundings. Indeed, it had become something of an unofficial HQ for the West Kilkenny Flying Column, especially since the 9 Mile House ambush just 3 months previously in December 1920, which forced the loss of the local IRA men to go on the run for fear of arrest. So the arrival of six members of the West Kilkenny / 7th Battalion Flying Column to Garry Ricken House late on a Friday night, the 11th of March, was nothing out of the ordinary. They had just come from the funerals of three Tipperary IRA members, these being Patrick Hackett from Drangan and Martin Clancy and Dick Fleming from nearby Myglass. The three men had been killed the previous week at Knockrow Hill near Drangan, just over the Tipperary border, having been surrounded by soldiers of the Lincolnshire Regiment when a battalion meeting was being held. And remember, the Mulnahone IRA Company, although in County Tipperary, was part of the 7th Battalion Callan IRA. Drangan is only the next parish over from Mulnahone, so these men would have all known each other quite well. Indeed, a number of the Callan IRA were involved in the Drangan RIC barracks attack the previous June. Little did the Kilkenny IRA men know, as they rested in Garry Ricken late that Friday night, that they too were very shortly going to find themselves in much the same predicament as their recently deceased comrades. Within a few hours, they also would be surrounded. So, in the early hours of Saturday, the 12th of March, 1921, at around 3 a.m., the Column men retired for the night. They had spent a lovely evening chatting with the Luttrells. They played cards, and of course, they were fed and watered. Five members of the Flying Column decided to sleep in the empty Garry Ricken house, which was only across the yard from the Luttrell family home and which was attached to the caretaker John Luttrell's house. The Column men that slept here were the Flying Column leader or officer commanding, who was James Jim Lahey, who was aged 26, the Vice OC or Vice Officer Commanding Ned Elward, who was aged 25, and 22-year-old Sean Quinn, who all slept upstairs in the main house in an empty bedroom. Paddy Luttrell and Jim McKenna slept in a downstairs bedroom. A sixth member of the Flying Column, that's Paddy Ryan, slept in the Luttrell family house where they all had dined. This was at the rear of Garry Ricken House, as I said. Unbeknownst to the IRA men, the Crown Forces in Callan had been tipped off that very same evening about the presence of strange men in the vicinity of Garry Ricken. Someone had noticed the column heading in the direction of the house and had informed the authorities. The Crown Forces were aware that men on the run used the house to sleep in, but would have needed to catch people in the house instead of just raiding it when no one was there. Now, I often use the term the Crown Forces to depict the British side. I use the Crown Forces phrase a lot purposely in my book. To explain, I think it's a very useful umbrella term or catch-all phrase, as it incorporates the four different wings of the British authority in Ireland. These were the regular RIC police, who were mostly Irish men, hence why the term British Forces can be a bit off-putting. Second is the military or the regular army, made up of regiments that existed at the time, usually from England. Third, we have the now infamous Black and Tans, or the RIC Special Reserve, to give them the correct title. 80% or more of these were born on the island of Britain, although most of the remaining 20% were actually Irish. The majority of the Black and Tan recruits were former privates from the First World War and usually from a working class urban background. In a time where there was a scarcity of jobs after the war, this was an easy fit for them. And finally, we had the auxiliaries, which were mostly made up of former British soldiers of the officer class or the officer grade, as distinct from the former privates who made up the bulk of the Black and Tans. The auxiliaries were at the time the highest paid police force in the world, on £1 a day. In Kilkenny, the auxiliaries, which were more dreaded than the Tans, were based in Woodstock in Inishteig and were not initially involved in the Garry Ricken affair. However, the other three wings of law enforcement were. So that's the Army, the regular or local RIC, and the Black and Tans. It is important also to note that many people at this time in Kilkenny referred to any mixture of law enforcement as the Tans. For example, the Tans raided a house could be a mixture of military RIC and Tans, or perhaps even just auxiliaries, who usually worked independently of the others. As you can imagine, at the time people weren't too caught up in who was doing the raiding on their house, but it is important to explain for our story here. So back to Callan Barracks. That Friday night, a large planning operation swung into action. In summary, three wings of the Crown Forces would converge on Garry Ricken House at the same time at first light. This would involve the Crown Forces coming at the house from three separate directions to avoid anyone escaping. They were all to be there at 7 a.m. However, as we will see, one of these parties arrived late, which benefited the IRA men greatly. At exactly 7 a.m, the Callan RIC District Inspector Hubert Leslie Bainham, Corporal Fisher and Lieutenant Williams, the latter two were both of the Devonshire Regiment, knocked loudly on the door of the caretaker's house, which was attached to the main Garry Ricken house. They requested to be let in immediately. Upon looking out the window from his upstairs bedroom, the caretaker, John Luttrell, saw exactly what was happening. Basically, the house was surrounded. He knew it was more than likely that men were sleeping in the main house, but he had not stayed up late with them, having a young family. He told his wife, Annie Luttrell, to quickly run up the hall to see if there was any men sleeping there. John delayed opening the door long enough for Annie to alert the three sleeping IRA men in the upstairs bedroom. She told him to get up quickly, the Tans are here, you'll get us all killed. She had to pull their hair to wake them up, as they weren't long gone to bed. She then ran quickly back down the main corridor to go back to the bedroom to mind her three children, all of whom were under the age of 5. The two IRA men sleeping downstairs were as of yet unaware of the imminent danger. After looking in the caretaker's room, the military turned into the long passageway that led to the main house. This corridor, if you can imagine, was L-shaped, with a sharp left turn at the end. Perhaps now is a good time to let Ned Elward take up the story. In his own words, he said the following occurred after Annie had woken him. Quote, "Without any questions, I got out and kicked the other two out, that being Lahey and Sean Quinn. It was one of the women folk of the house who had called us, and the last thing I heard her say as she went out the door was that the house was surrounded. My Colt automatic on the lanyard around my shoulder was in my hand before I was even out of the bed. I was pulling on my trousers when a voice from the doorway shouted, 'Hands up!' We had the shutters closed in our windows that we could not see what was going on outside. As I turned to fire at the voice in the doorway, there was a shot fired, as it seemed, straight in my face, which however did not hit me, and I fired back two or three times. I heard them shouting and running down the corridor, while I followed with my automatic still going. It was a big house, and at one part near the lower end, it overlooked the remainder of the house attached to us. From here we could see the district inspector leaning out of a window and directing his men where to go and what to do. From which it was evident that the house was, in fact, surrounded. Jimmy Leahy and I went back to our room for our rifles. Coming back to where we could see the DI, we shot at him, which took effect as he flopped on the sill of the window. Fire was opened in our direction from all around the house outside." End quote. So some of the soldiers had ran back to the caretaker's bedroom and some had ran down the stairs for cover. John Luttrell, his wife Annie and the three children sheltered in the bedroom as bullets flew up and down the hallway. As described by Elward, because of the L-shaped geography of the house, Elward and Lahey could see Bainham from the window of the hallway they were in, and they fired from their window across to his window. Bainham was dazed as he hit the ground. One bullet had entered the side of his neck and exited through his shoulder. He began bleeding profusely. John Luttrell was ordered by another soldier to lift him up on the bed. He had hesitated to help as he had his 4-year-old son James Jr. and his 1-year-old daughter Barbara in his arms, but had to leave the children down as a gun was pointed in his direction to force him to help. He and Annie then bandaged up the wound of Captain Bainham as best they could, using the sheets from the bed to try and stop the bleeding. Meanwhile, Lahey and Elward decided now was the best time to make an escape and noticed there seemed to be less Crown forces at the rear of the house. Lahey later said that, quote, "We returned fire through the windows in other rooms of the front of the house, and this, I believe, gave the military the impression that there was a big force inside. I knew the layout of the house and its surroundings intimately, and I also realised that the longer we remained inside the house, the less chance we would have when we went out." End quote. Corporal Fisher of the Devonshire Regiment, who was taking cover behind a tree in front of the house, shot two very lights into the air. These were kind of like flares and could be seen for miles around. This was to alert their comrades nearby that reinforcements were needed. As Lahey said, he knew the layout of the house and surrounding lands intimately, as he was brought up in the next town's land over, which is called Coyle, and later lived in Powlach Capel, also nearby, so he led the way out. It was decided to make their escape by the rear courtyard. Gary Ricken Woods at the back of the house would provide some cover, if they actually got that far. But they were correct in their assumption. The rear house of the house was the weak point of the cordon, as one section of the military had failed to arrive on time. Instead, a small number of black and tans had to be posted hurriedly along the rear. As they tried to get out of the house, the three would-be escapees nearly fell to the ground floor from the landing as part of the stairs was missing, but they eventually got down on a not-so-stable ladder. As it was nearly half an hour since the Crown forces arrived, they presumed their two comrades sleeping on the ground floor of the house had already escaped. Indeed, Lahey said afterwards that, quote, "Before descending the ladder, I made a quick survey of the position in the courtyard from an end window. I saw one of our men, whom I mistook to be James McKenna, firing out through a doorway on the left-hand side of the courtyard. This gave me the impression that McKenna and Paddy Luttrell had got out." End quote. But Paddy Luttrell and Jim McKenna were still trapped in a room in the front of the house. They had got into this room through the window the night before, as the door was locked, as it was Lord Ormond's bedroom and it was always left ready for him. In the meantime, with revolvers loaded, Lahey, Elward and Quinn said a quick prayer and what they thought was their last act of contrition perhaps also praying for some divine inspiration from the three Tipperary comrades who he had just laid to rest the day before, they made a quick run for us. They first sprinted into the backyard, where luckily for them, Paddy Ryan, who had slept in the Luttrell family home, was already engaging in a gunfight with some of the Crown forces. It was he who Lachie had mistaken for Jim McKenna. He quickly joined his three companions as he saw them running towards him, and all four began shooting in various directions at the Crown Force positions as they ran for the shelter of a cowshed. One newspaper at the time reported the dramatic events as follows. One of the men who rushed from the house had a revolver in each hand, which he blazed away at the sergeant in orthodox Wild West style fashion, as portrayed in the pictures. End quote. Passing through the shed, the four men ran through another yard containing haystacks, surrounded by a stone wall which provided them with some cover before arriving at a back lane. Just as they hopped over a stile at the end wall, a black-and-tanned constable named Ernest Riley appeared from behind a tree and started firing at them. With their adrenaline now in full flow, all four column men took aim and fired. 26-year-old Riley died instantly, having been struck in the head and shoulder, with none of the escapees being hit. It was in all likelihood that Paddy Ryan imparted the fatal blow to the head, as he had held back fire after the other column men had shot, as he knew Riley would reappear from behind a tree to fire his round. Sean Quinn quickly seized Riley's rifle. They had to fire another volley of shots partly down the lane as two tans had fired on them from a distance. The four men escaped through the rear lane and the fields and woods beyond. Eventually they arrived in a safe house, an elderly man who lived in Owen named Paddy Sinnott of Mallardstown near Callan, which was about 9 kilometres away. Here they had tea and dried their clothes by the fire. Paddy Sinnott even went into Callan to find out more information for them. It's then they found out that the men who had slept downstairs had been captured. That evening Ned Egan of the Nemagen arrived with some whiskey to help calm their nerves. They later moved to stay with the Hickeys of the Nemagen for safety. So how did the aforementioned Paddy Luttrell and Jim McKenna fare that morning in Garryricken? They were not as fortunate as their comrades, having been trapped in the downstairs bedroom with no view of proceedings and actually only woke up when the first shots were fired. At one stage later in the morning, they broke through the bedroom door they were in and tried to escape through the caretaker's corridor, but fire was opened on them when they rounded the corner and they fired back. A Lewis machine gun was also positioned in the front lawn of the house. It had sprayed fire in all the upper windows of the house. At one stage, Paddy Luttrell opened the front door with the idea of escaping, but a local RIC man who recognised him shouted, "Go back in, Paddy, or you'll be blown to bits." They had no alternative but to wait and be caught. The two men hid their guns as best they could under floorboards and underneath some rubbish. They lit the fire in the kitchen and waited for the house to be rushed by the military, which actually took a few hours and did not happen till about 10:30 a.m. as the Crown Forces had to wait for County Inspector White to arrive and reinforcements to come from Kilkenny. When the soldiers eventually busted through the kitchen door, the men were smoking by the fire. Paddy Luttrell refused to put his hands up, ignoring the officers, and he received a rifle butt to the head for his troubles. They were badly beaten afterwards to try and get information on the others, but didn't give away anything. Paddy's sister Ally was allowed to speak to him while he waited to be brought away. She barely recognised him, so badly was his beating, and he was also covered in blood. Cleverly, Ally Luttrell, later Cantwell, had put on Paddy Ryan's Irish Volunteer uniform under her own clothes so it wouldn't be found in her parents' house. She later gave it back to Paddy Ryan and he proudly kept it for the rest of his life. James McKenna, the other column man captured, suffered a similar beating. He got a rifle butt to the knee at one stage, which plagued him for the rest of his life. He had to retire from work in later life, as his right knee had started to constantly give way, as he puts. He was never able to straighten his right leg for the rest of his life after that morning in Garryricken in March 1921. Funnily enough, James McKenna had been in the Leinster Regiment of the British Army for 3.5 years during the First World War. He joined the IRA on his return. However, this connection to the army was not enough to save him from a beating, especially considering one of the Crown Forces had been killed. Extra severe revenge beatings for a dead comrade were all too common. Meanwhile, when the area where Riley was killed was being searched, a pocket watch was found. When Sean Quinn had taken the rifle from Riley, his watch had unknowingly fell from his pocket. He had bought the watch secondhand from a person called Martin Gunn, whose name was inscribed into the timepiece. Another name was also inscribed, probably another owner, John Marr Ballydavid, which was near Mullinhone. The unfortunate Gunn, though, had to go on the run, as his description appeared in the media, where he was named as the murderer of Constable Riley, even though he was never actually in Gary Ricken house that day. Also attached to the watch chain were Quinn's 1919 South Tipperary Football Championship medal. He had played for Mullinhone, and also a Loreto Physical Education Society medal, perhaps from Clonmel, where he was in school. Luckily for him, neither of these were inscribed. The watch casing also contained a lock of brown hair, although we do not know whose hair it was. Perhaps it was a sweetheart, or it could have been Sean's deceased father, who died when Sean was still a toddler. Sniffer dogs, or bloodhounds as they were called then, were brought in to pursue the men. Possibly these were the auxiliaries from Inistig, who were known to have dogs of this type. To get the scent, they used one of Ned Elward's boots, which had got stuck in the mud in the boggy ground near where Riley was shot, along with a necktie that was also found in the vicinity. They traced the men as far as Curra Woods near Gary Ricken. They surrounded it, thinking the column men were still inside the wood, but he'd already escaped by this time. It is likely the dogs lost the scent after the men had crossed the stream. From a Crown Force perspective, the events at Gary Ricken House were highly embarrassing. One constable was killed, a district inspector was severely wounded, although he survived, and four IRA men managed to escape, although the official report only said three escaped. This was all against the much superior numbers of at least 35 members of the Crown Forces. The inevitable inquiry that follows attributed blame in a number of areas, particularly at Lieutenant Evans's party for failing to show up on time. Evans later said that his party had arrived late as they were delayed by ditches and the difficult nature of the ground. It shows that there was sometimes an air of tension between the different wings of the Crown Forces who had been foisted together in Ireland in 1920. The most notable findings of the Gary Ricken inquiry were, quote, District Inspector Bainham acted on reliable information, but a complete roundup of active rebels was spoiled by entering the house prematurely. Thomas Luttrell and James Luttrell Jr. undoubtedly belonged to the same gang, but there is no evidence that they were in the main building or took part in the shooting. Second Lieutenant Evans's party, that's a group of 10 soldiers from the Devonshire Regiment, had not reached the scene at the time some of the rebels escaped. The deceased Constable Riley was left in the air, that is to say exposed, as Constable Griffiths was not where D.I. Bainham intended him to be. End quote. Another finding of the Crown Force inquiry stated that the bullet which caused the wound to Riley was a dum-dum or some form of explosive bullet. End quote. This was untrue, as the IRA did not possess bullets of that kind. It was an accusation often made against the IRA in an attempt to taint their reputation to the general public by amplifying their brutishness. The large amount of damage caused to Constable Riley's forehead is the reason many believed an explosive bullet was used. Writing over 30 years later, the leader of the IRA ASU that day, that's James Leahy, was still keen to emphasise the reality of what occurred, stating, quote, at the subsequent British military inquiry into the Gary Ricken affair, it was stated, and it appeared in the press at the time, that Constable Riley died from two bullet wounds in the stomach and one in the head, and that the wound in his head was caused by a dum-dum bullet. None of our men was in possession of dum-dum ammunition, and it is my opinion that the bullet which hit him in the head first hit his cap badge, or perhaps the wire of his cap, and it was thus how he received such a jagged wound. End quote. Along with Paddy Luttrell and Jim McKenna, another three men were arrested and court-martialed for being at Gary Ricken that day. These were John Luttrell, that's the caretaker, and his younger brothers, James and Tom Luttrell, who were all guilty by association, so to speak, having been young males present in the Luttrell family home that morning. All five were tried by military court-martial in Waterford on the 10th of June 1921, that's 3 months after the event, where the charges included war against His Majesty and the unlawful possession of firearms, including four revolvers and two rifles. The guns in the main house had been found in military searches after the event. showing that their intelligence gathering system was pretty impressive. The RSC at the court martial stated that three of the accused were present at the Tipperary funerals in Drangan the afternoon previous to the Gary Rickon Shoes house. The three brothers, John, James and Tom Luttrell, were found not guilty and released, although they had been incarcerated for 3 months at that point. John was the luckiest to get off, considering the men had been found in his house, along with the weapons, which the authorities said were fouled, which meant they had been fired recently. John's acquittal was helped by the fact that he got a glowing reference from his employer, that's the land steward for the Earl of Ormond, and also from a retired police sergeant from Callan. James and Tom had been through the mill. On the day of the Gary Rickon affair, they had been brought to a backyard by the Crown Forces and placed against a wall and told they would be shot if they didn't give information on the men that escaped. They didn't say anything and a countdown was initiated, but the military fired the shots over their heads upon reaching zero. All the while, their mother, Bridges, was praying inside in the house that her sons would survive. In addition, a few weeks after the three brothers' release, Tom Luttrell took part in an ambush in Mulnahone on the eve of the truce, where an army sergeant, John William Reynolds, was killed. The other men court-martialed that day, that's Paddy Luttrell and Jim McKenna, who were found in the kitchen of the main house, were sentenced to death. Luckily for them, this was later commuted to life in prison. They were released after the treaty was signed in December 1921, after nearly a year in prison. The wounded district inspector, that's Hubert Leslie Bainham, aged 28 and originally from Swansea in Wales, was awarded £6,000 compensation for his injuries, increased from £5,000 on appeal. The high value was due to the fact that, as a result of his injuries, he would lose his £700 per annum salary and also lose the possibility of promotion. He had spent a month in Kilkenny Military Hospital, where he said he could not move, before being transferred to a private hospital in Swansea. But he returned to Ireland in June for the medical assessment. The military doctor at the compensation hearing said it was a miracle he survived at all, and a man of a weaker constitution might have died, as the bullet scraped his spinal column in the neck, injuring a nerve while also passing through the lung and exiting from his shoulder. The compensation money was to be charged against Kilkenny and Tipperary County Councils jointly. Bainham also said that £30 worth of his clothes were injured by bullet holes and blood. In contrast to Bainham, the mother of the deceased constable Ernest James Riley from 12 Coleman Street in Brighton, England, was awarded £750 for the death of her son. Riley had only joined the Black and Tans on the 24th of February, just 3 weeks previously. The unlucky Riley had spent 4.5 years of his short 26-year life as a prisoner of war in the German POW camp during the First World War. The feat in escaping against overwhelming odds was complemented by the IRA Chief of Staff, Richard Mulcahy, who was later leader of the Fine Gael Party, who sent his congratulations to Kilkenny Brigade OC George O'Dwyer. It was an immense morale boost for the Kilkenny Brigade during these final pivotal months of the War of Independence. The publicity garnered was important, as it felt like the local lads had got one over on the old enemy. One of the questions the IRA had to ask afterwards was why had the two scouts, who were members of the nearby Coola IRA, not given advanced warning of the approaching military? They had been posted outside Gary Rickon during the night. It transpired that one of them, Cody, had gone home before sunrise to get some sleep before work the next day, and another, Michael Kearney, had been captured by Crown Forces when he was out collecting sticks for the fire. He had actually been caught by Constable Riley. He said he was a farm worker going to work on the farm. He was put behind a side wall and kept to the ground as the bullets started flying around later that morning. Tom Luttrell was also on scout duty, but had gone inside at 6:30 a.m. to get the fire lighting in his parents' house for the day and also to make some tea for himself and Kearney. It was he who noticed a soldier on the side lane and woke Paddy Ryan up from the upstairs bedroom. He had actually tried to get across to the main house but was captured. It is likely some of the scouts got a stern reprimand in the aftermath of Gary Rickon for allowing the Crown Forces to literally sneak up on the flying column. I wouldn't have liked to have been them on the receiving end of that. Kearney was not arrested as he was not armed and did not try to escape, and the local RIC officer, the Sergeant Moran, seemed to believe his story and vouched for him. But they had done their duty right up until daylight and thus were very unlucky. In addition, the Crown Forces were on foot as they had left their vehicles some miles away, so they would not have been heard approaching. It is impossible to understate what a loss losing Leahy and Elward would have been if they had been caught on that day, not just to the column, but to the Kilkenny IRA as a whole. Many men signed up to fight in the IRA, but very few leaders of that calibre existed, and it would have been a disaster from an IRA military perspective if they were captured. As an aside, many of our ancestors and relations would have known Garry Rickenhouse quite well. This is because during the truce in the summer of 1921, a two-week training camp was held there for all the local IRA of West Kilkenny. Hundreds of men and women of Cumannamon converged on the house for this military-type training, which came in useful for those who fought in the subsequent civil war. Most of the escapees that day lived long lives afterwards. Jim Leahy stepped down as OC of the column some days after Garry Ricken. He possibly had shingles, which is not a surprise given that virus attacks a person when they are run down and lacking sleep. Leahy stayed at the friendly Dr. Marnell's of Rogerstown House, Kilmaganny, while he recuperated. Ned Elward then became OC of the column and later the OC of the entire Callan 7th Battalion IRA. Leahy did rejoin the column the following month, but Elward stayed in charge. Leahy lived with his sister Ellie and brother Phil close to the scene of his great escape until he died in the 1960s. He did not take an active part in the Civil War. Although a bullet passed inches from his face that morning in Garry Ricken, Nell Edward had a long life afterwards, moving to Chicago first, then to Ferrybank in South Kilkenny, where he became a manager in the Clover Meats factory. He passed away at the age of 80 in 1976. Interestingly, Edward was also elected to Dáil Éireann unopposed in May 1921, just 2 months after his Garry Ricken escape. He was unaware that his name had even been put forward for the constituency until he was actually elected. He later led the anti-treaty IRA for the entire Kilkenny Brigade during the Civil War. James McKenna lived out his life close by and died in Garry Thomas Winegap in July 1967. Paddy Ryan emigrated to the US after the Troubles and lived out his life there, always cherishing his Irish volunteer uniform that Ali Luttrell had saved for him that day. However, one of the four escapees that day was not blessed with a long life. Perhaps it would have been better for Sean O'Quinn if he was actually caught that day. Quinn was from Mullinahome, was originally from Mullingar County, Westmeath, and was 22 years old. His luck ran out on Friday the 13th of May 1921, just 2 months after his Garry Ricken feats. Here he was fatally wounded in the fields of Knocknagress near Tullerone, along with Pat Welcher to Nomagan, while trying to escape from a safe house. Once again he was surrounded by Crown forces, but this time his luck ran out. But that is a story for another day, and we'll cover that in a later episode of the series. Just to thank you all again for listening, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast, and don't forget to join your local library to avail of all the amazing free resources. Until next time, goodbye.